All right, up next is Melly, Waiting for Guffman 1996, written by Christopher Guest, Eugene Levy. The I'm Gonna Bite My Pillow monologue, flamboyant theater director Corky St. Clair reacted with upset to the flabbergasted town council of Blaine, Missouri, that refused to give him $100,000 to produce his play. Let's listen to Melly.
So, what I'm understanding here, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you're not giving me any money? So now I'm left basically with nothing. I'm left with zero, in which, what can I do with zero, you know? What can I can't do anything with it. I need to, this is my life here we're talking about. We're not just talking about, you know, something else. We're talking about my life, you know? It's forcing me to do something I don't want to do. To leave, to go out and just leave and go home and say, make a clean cut here and say, no way, Corky. You're not putting up with these people. And I'll tell you why I can't put up with you people. Because you're bastard people. That's what you are. You're just bastard people. And I'm going home and I'm gonna bite my pillow is what I'm gonna do.
That was Melly on The Waiting for Guffman. She's the only one on the monologue, so 8 points go to Team Oscar. Ooh. Next up we have Chasing Amy. Do you want to set it up?
Sure. 1997, Chasing Amy. Screenwriter Kevin Smith. The I am forever changed because of who you are. Confession of love. No longer able to hold back his feelings, Holden McNeil, played by Ben Affleck, confessed his love for his best friend Alyssa Jones, played by Joey Lauren Adams, a fellow comic book artist and a lesbian. He stopped his car, turned to her, and blurted out.
And first on that monologue we have Blacka Jacka. Let's listen.
I love you. I love you. And not in a friendly way, although I think we're great friends. And not in a misplaced affection puppy dog way, although I'm sure that's what you're gonna call it. I love you. Very, very simple. Very truly. You are the epitome of everything I've ever looked for in another human being, and I know that you think of me as just a friend, and crossing that line is the furthest thing from an option you would ever consider, but I had to say it. I can't take this anymore. I can't stand next to you without wanting to hold you, and I can't look into your eyes without feeling that longing you only read about in trashy romance novels. I can't talk to you without wanting to express my love for everything you are. And I know this will probably queer our friendship, no pun intended, but I had to say it, because I've never felt this way before, and I don't care. I like who I am because of it. And if bringing it to light means we can't hang out anymore, then that hurts me. But God, I couldn't allow another day to go by without getting it out there, regardless of the outcome, which by the look on your face is probably going to be the inevitable shoot down. And you know, I'll accept that, but I know that some part of you is hesitating for a moment, and if there's a moment of hesitation, then that means you feel something too, and all I ask is, please, is that you just don't dismiss that. Just try to dwell in it for just 10 seconds. Alyssa, there isn't another soul on this fucking planet who has ever made me feel half the person that I am when I'm with you. And I would risk this friendship for the chance to take it to the next plateau. Because it is there, between you and me. You can't deny that. Even Even if you know, even if we never talk again, after tonight, please know that I am forever changed because of who you are and what you've meant to me. Which, while I do appreciate it, I'd never need a painting of birds bought at a diner to remind me of you.
Next up, Spiral.
I love you. I love you. And not in a friendly way. Although I think we're great friends. And not in a misplaced affection puppy dog way. Although I'm sure that's what you'll call it. I love you. Very, very simple. Very truly. You are the epitome of everything I've ever looked for in another human being. And I know that you think of me as just a friend. And crossing that line is the furthest thing from an option you would ever consider. But I had to say it. I can't take this anymore. I can't stand next to you without wanting to hold you. I can't look into your eyes without feeling that longing you only read about in trashy romance novels. I can't talk to you without wanting to express my love for everything you are. And I know this will probably queer our friendship, no pun intended. But I had to say it. Because I've never felt this way before. And I don't care. I like who I am because of it. And if bringing this to light means we can't hang out anymore, then that hurts me. But God, I can't allow another day to go by without just getting it out there, regardless of the outcome. Which, by the look on your face, is to be the inevitable shoot down. And, you know, I'll accept that. But I know that some part of you is hesitating for a moment. And if there's a moment of hesitation, then that means you feel something too. And all I ask, please, is that you just not dismiss that and try to dwell in it for just 10 seconds. Alyssa, there isn't another soul on this fucking planet who has ever made me half the person I am when I'm with you. And I would risk this friendship for the chance to take it to the next plateau. Because it is there between you and me, you can't deny that. Even if, you know, even if we never talk again after tonight. Please know that I am forever changed because of who you are and what you've meant to me. Which, while I do appreciate it, I'd never need a painting of birds bought at a diner to remind me of.
And Jinxer's on the monologue as well.
I love you. I love you, and not in a friendly way, although I think we're great friends, and not in a misplaced affection or puppy dog way, although I'm sure that's what you'll call it. I love you, and it's very, very simple, very truly. You are the epitome of everything I've ever looked for in another human being, and I know you think of me as just a friend, and crossing that line is the furthest thing from an option you would ever consider, but I had to say it. I can't take this anymore. I can't stand next to you without wanting to hold you. I can't look into your eyes without feeling that longing you only read about in trashy romance novels. I can't talk to you without wanting to express my love for everything you are. And I know this will probably queer our friendship. No pun intended. But I had to say it, because I've never felt this way before, and I don't care. I like who I am because of it, and if bringing this to light means we can't hang out anymore, then that hurts me, but God, I couldn't allow another day to go by without just getting it out there, regardless of the outcome. Which, by the look on your face, is to be the inevitable shoot-down. And, you know, I'll accept that. But I know that some part of you is hesitating for a moment. And if there's a moment of hesitation, then that means you feel something too. And all I ask, please, is that you just not dismiss that and try to dwell in it for just 10 seconds. Alyssa, there isn't another soul on this fucking planet who has ever made me half the person I am when I'm with you. And I would risk this friendship for the chance to take it to the next plateau. Because it is there between you and me. You can't deny that. Even if we never talk again after tonight, please know that I am forever changed because of who you are and what you've meant to me, which, while I do appreciate it, I'd never need a painting of birds bought at a diner to remind me of.
All right, that was Chasing Amy. Let's start with Blackjack.
Shall I go first, or do you want?
Go ahead.
All right. I thought that you did very well on this, Blackjack. It was really cute. One of the things that I have is, it really touched me. I can't actually do the voice.
It really touched
but...
me. Come on, try. Try to do the voice.
No.
Come on, try.
No, I can't.
All right, fine.
I just choked on some chicken, so.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Was... Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
Oh, my God.
All
right. Hello, VH. I am Malt, and I am horrible saying anything.
I'm going to edit it so it sounds like you're saying I am Malt and I am whore.
I am Malt and I am a whore.
Go ahead with what you're saying.
I'm not even going to try explaining it. No. I'm so sorry. I just ruined this critique.
Oh, it was awesome.
Okay. Well, I thought it was awkward, but in like a good way that worked for it. I loved the emotion. You just did very well. I'm gonna, like, go die somewhere. You critique him now.
I like the read, Blackjack. The emotion to me felt a little bit put on. I may just be spoiled by how natural you normally sound in your reads. This one felt a smidge acty to me, but at the end, from Alyssa, there isn't another soul on this fucking planet. From that point on, I felt it. That's when I felt like that monologue came alive, and I really felt, like, the urgency there. So I really liked the read. Let's talk about Spiral.
You talk about Spiral first.
Spiral, for me, it was a little bit whiny sounding. I liked it. I liked the, you sounded fairly genuine in the monologue, but I think the direction you took to approach it came off as kind of whiny. And I'm thinking if I'm some lesbian that you're trying to turn straight, I don't think I would be into that. What did you think about Spiral's monologue?
You done?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't want to interrupt you. All right, but yeah, like, I think it had a bit of an odd tone to it. I put, like, it sounded like sexy breathing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you had very, like, I liked your emotion at the end. But, yeah, just, it sounded just sort of odd with the breathing tones. It sounded more like you were trying to seduce rather than convince.
Mm-hmm. Well, to come back to...
Stop it, Skype. Oh, hi. I was yelling at Skype.
Carry on.
Where did it leave off on me?
That she was trying to seduce rather than convince. Hello.
Oh, yeah, then that's basic.
Hello? Hello? Oh, dear. I'm gonna... Okay, we're back. Hopefully the internet will hold out. We're gonna talk about Jinxers now.
Jinxers!
The music killed it for me in a bad way. It made it sort of sound like a tampon commercial. I think your reed overall was probably the best, but the music choice made it really melodramatic sounding, and I'm having trouble separating the reed from the music and getting past the music to just to hear the reed. And I think that while everybody can add music if they want, I think you have to be careful in what you add and what you're doing to your monologue. What did you think?
I actually sort of like the music,
okay.
But I feel like with the pacing of it, it made it really slow,
mm-hmm.
And it was that kind of got me iffy on this one, but I think that you did very well with the reed, and when the music first started, I got, like, this huge smile on my face, because I just thought it was, like, it was great, but yeah, I think the pacing of it is what sort of brought it down for me.
Well, we have completely opposite opinions on the music, so that's cool. Did you pick a winner?
I did
as well. I chose Blackjack.
I chose Jinxers.
All right. They split 9-9. So, ooh. Team Utterly Absurd gets 9 points, so that puts them at 208.5. And Team Oscar gets 9 points, which puts them at 134.5. And we have up next Ants, worth 12 points from 1998.
Oh, my God.
Screenwriters Todd Alcott, Chris Weitz, and Paul Weitz. The insignificance of being an ant. The animated film's main character was neurotic drone ant Z4195, or ZZ, or Z, I mean, living in a conformist totalitarian ant society without any individuality. In his opening monologue, he complained about his insignificant life during therapy to his psychologist, who concluded their discussion with the statement that Z had made a breakthrough. Yes, Z, you are insignificant. Okay, you can unmute now if you're done typing. Or you can keep typing and stay muted. I'll just introduce the first person, and it is Jeffers. So let's listen to Jeffers.
All my life, I've lived and worked in the big city, which, now that I think about it, is kind of a problem since I always feel uncomfortable around crowds. I mean it. I have this fear of enclosed spaces. Everything makes me feel trapped all the time. You know, I always tell myself, there's gotta be something better out there. But maybe I think too much. I think everything must go back to the fact that I had a very anxious childhood. You know, my mother never had time for me. You know when you're the middle child in a family of 5 million, you don't get any attention. I mean, how is it possible? And I've always had these abandonment issues, which plagued me. My father was basically a drone, like I've said, and, you know, the guy flew away when I was just a larva. And my job. Don't get me started on it, because it really annoys me. I was not cut out to be a worker, I'll tell you that right now. I feel physically inadequate. My whole life, I've never been able to lift more than 10 times my own body weight, and when you get down to it, handling dirt is, you know, ew. It's not my idea of a rewarding career. It's this whole gung-ho super organism thing that I can't get. I try, but I can't get it. I mean, you know, what is it? I'm supposed to do everything for the colony, and what about my needs? What about me? I mean, I gotta believe there's some place out there that's better than this. Otherwise, I'll just curl up in a larval position and weep. The whole system makes me feel Insignificant.
Russ is up next.
All my life, I've lived and worked in the big city, which, now that I think of it, is kind of a problem, since I always feel uncomfortable around crowds. I mean, I have this fear of enclosed spaces. Everything makes me feel trapped all the time. You know, I always tell myself there's got to be something better out there, but maybe I think too much. I think everything must go back to the fact that I had a very anxious childhood. You know, my mother never had time for me. You know, when you're the middle child in a family of 5 million, you don't get any attention. I mean, how's it possible? And I've always had these abandonment issues which plagued me. My father was basically a drone, like I've said, and you know, the guy flew away when I was just a larva. And my job, don't get me started on it, because it really annoys me. I was not cut out to be a worker. I'll tell you right now, I feel physically inadequate. My whole life, I've never been able to lift more than 10 times my own body weight. And when you get down to it, handling dirt is, you know, is not my idea of a rewarding career. It's this whole gung-ho superorganism thing that I can't get. I try, but I can't get it. I mean, you know, what is it? I'm supposed to do everything for the colony? And what about my needs? What about me? I mean, I gotta believe there's some place out there that's better than this. Otherwise, I will just curl up in a larval position and weep. The whole system makes me feel insignificant.
Axelden's also on this one.
All my life, I've lived and worked in the big city. But now that I think of it, it's kind of a problem since I always feel uncomfortable around crowds. I mean it. I have this fear of enclosed spaces. Everything makes me feel trapped all the time. You know, I always tell myself, there's got to be something better out there. But maybe I think too much. I think everything must go back to the fact that I had a very anxious childhood. You know, my mother had me. My mother never had time for me. You know, when you're the middle child of a family of 5 million, you don't get any attention. I mean, how is it possible? And I've always had these abandonment issues, which plagued me. My father was basically a drone, like I've said. And, you know, the guy flew away when I was a larva. And my job, don't get me started on, because it really annoys me. I was not cut out to be a worker. I'll tell you right now, I feel physically inadequate. My whole life, I've never been able to lift more than 10 times my own body weight. And when you get down to it, holding dirt is, you know, ew. It's not my idea of a rewarding career. It's the whole gung-ho superorganism thing that I can't get. I try, but I can't get. I mean, you know, what is it? I'm supposed to do everything for the colony, and what about my needs? What about me? I mean, I gotta believe there's some place out there that's better than this. Otherwise, I will just curl up in a larval position and weep. The whole system makes me feel insignificant.
All right, we are going to... I just want to say before we even start, this monologue is a really good example of people picking monologues that suit their acting strengths.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Jeffers first. I thought it was a great choice for the character. It's a great example of matching your voice to the character. I totally bought you as like a neurotic aunt. It worked for me. I liked the read on it. You sounded like vulnerable and like you'd been kicked around your whole life. I liked it a lot. What did you think?
I agree. I really enjoy, like, you definitely sounded sort of, like, uncomfortable. And I really liked how you, like, handled that. Nitpicking, the one thing I didn't like is how every time you stuttered, it was just it was the same stutter.
Yeah.
And that just stuck out to me. All right, and that's it for me.
All right, well, what did you think of Russ?
Hang on.
Okay.
I was sneezing, so.
Oh, bless you.
Thank you. Do you want to do Russ or?
I could do it. I'll do Russ. I could tell you were channeling Woody Allen. It sounded like a Woody Allen impression, but you added enough of your own thing to it to make it really entertaining to me. I thought this was another great read. It was highly entertaining. You added some things to it. It was really funny. Like this one, the comedy of the monologue showed a lot more than Jeffers, and I think it's cool that two people can read the same monologue and two different things come out of it. What did you think of Russ?
Once again, I agree. I really, really loved how you, like, brought the comedy into this, and now, but, like, same thing that I did with Zigbar's. Like, I took a little sentence from it that, like, really stuck out to me and just made me smile. Like, the way that you said that, like, dirt is like, ew, and then you just kept on going. I really loved how you did that, and that was my favorite part of this monologue.
Axelin, there was stuttering in this. It sounded like you were reading it for the first time. You really have to have good quality control over your monologues, and I feel like I'm just telling you the same thing every week, and you're just doing the same thing every week. So I really want you to be able to improve on the show, but I don't feel like you're listening to anything anybody says, and I don't feel like you're, like, I almost don't feel like you're really trying that hard at this point. What did you think about this one? And I don't like to say people aren't trying, but from the, this was the one take.
Wait, are you done?
There were stutters.
You stopped.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. Well, yeah, like, I also sadly agree with Dylan on this one as well. Like, I feel like you're not taking into consideration what we say every week and, like, what people are trying to, like, say as well. I feel like maybe, I'm not going to say, like, I feel like you're just one taking everything, like, because, like, that's what a lot of people do. But I feel like when you do make a mistake with it, you aren't really, like, going back and trying to find it to fix it. And that was just the problem I had with this
one. Yeah, that's part of it. The other thing is, you have a very specific way of reading things. And, like, I get that you have trouble channeling characters and stuff, but you have a really unique voice and a really unique way of reading things, and you can totally work that in your favor, but you have to pick monologues that work for that, and this one did not work for it. But, like, I think you could be really entertaining to listen to and a really good actor if you're picking the right monologues. And I really do wish you would at least, because there's been times in listens when I've said something and you've kind of argued with it. I wish you would at least be open to criticism or critiques, because I think that's how you get better. Even if you don't agree, at least maybe try it, or try to take the good, the stuff that we say we like, and take that out of it if you don't want to hear the negative stuff. Because I really like you a lot, and I really want you to improve. Did you pick a winner, Malt?
I did.
Who did you pick?
And I think you are lagging out. Yep.
Yeah. Who did you pick, Malt? Can you hear me? She's typing. She says, fuck you, Internet Russ. All right, Russ. I picked Russ as well. So, Russ, you get the 12 points for your team, the Utterly Absurdists. So that puts you guys at 220.5. We have one more monologue, The Blair Witch Project, 10 points, Janie and Sundance Girl. 1999, Blair Witch Project, screenwriters Daniel Myrick, Eduardo Sanchez, The Apology Scene. One of the student filmmakers, Heather Donahue, filmed herself in the darkness, now feeling totally vulnerable and in danger. She apologized to her parents, of her fellow students, to other cast members, and to her own family as she cried in intense fear. First on this monologue is Janie Gurley 07, so let's listen to that.
To Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom, and I'm sorry to everyone. I was very naive. I am so, so sorry for everything that has happened, because in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault, because it was my project and I insisted on everything. I insisted that we weren't lost. I insisted that we keep going. I insisted that we walk south. Everything had to be my way, and this is where we've ended up. And it's all because of me that we are here now, hungry, cold, and hunted. I love you, Mom and Dad. I am so sorry. What was that? I am scared to close my eyes, and I am scared to open them. I'm gonna die out here.
Sundance Girl, also on the monologue.
I just want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom. I'm sorry to everyone. I was very naive. I'm so, so sorry for everything that has happened. Because in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault. Because it was my project. And I insisted. I insisted on everything. I insisted that we weren't lost. I insisted that we keep going. I insisted that we walk south. Everything had to be my way. And this is where we've ended up. And it's all because of me that we're here now. Hungry. Cold. And hunted. I love you, Mom. And Dad. I'm so sorry.
That was Janie Gurley 07 and Sundance Girl. We'll start with Janie Gurley. Janie, great read. I used to do a show called Act It, and I've done other shows where people have read this monologue. I've rarely heard it done well. I thought you did a great job with it. I wanted a little bit more of an emotional build at the end. The crying sounded a little bit fake to me. What did you think about Janie?
This read really, really impressed me. And I find it so amazing how you sound so unique on every monologue you do.
Mm-hmm.
And, everything you do, you just... it's always a surprise what you're going to do, Janie, and that's very impressive to me. And, I loved the emotion. I think that you definitely nailed the monologue. But, yeah, I think with the crying, it did sound a little forced.
Sundance Girl, I thought your crying sounded really awesome. Crying's hard to do. I wanted more of a scary moment on what was that, but I loved your crying in this so much. There were some weird noises going on in the background, but I'm just going to pretend it was tent noises. I thought you did a great job on this as well. What did you think of Sundance Girl? Hello? Hello? Okay. Internet problems. Are you back?
Oh, I hear you.
What did you think of Sundance Girl?
Sundance Girl. I loved... And also, by the way, I like how you both had this sort of, sound to it that made it sound like it was recorded on a camera mic. I just noticed that, and I thought it was really cool. It had, that slightly tinny echo.
Mm-hmm.
And once, with Sundance Girl as well, you had amazing emotion. The crying was incredibly believable with you. But, you fell victim to the thing that, I've said, I think, with maybe two others, where, it got to the point where you couldn't understand what you were actually saying.
I can see that.
Yeah, but, I think that you did very well on this, and this is a really, really tough choice for me. So.
I have made my choice. Have you made your choice?
I think I have too.
Okay, I actually picked Sundance Girl on this one.
I picked Janie.
Okay, they split 5 points, they split 10 points, I'm sorry. So Utterly Absurdist finished this week with 225.5. Team Heaven Sucks finished this week with 93 points. Team Bollywood 62, and Team Oscar 134.5. Next week is the last episode. 2000 High Fidelity, the all-time five most painful breakups monologue. 2001 Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death is that monologue. 2002 The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. There's some good in this world, and it's worth fighting for monologue. 2003 Finding Nemo. The Please Don't Go Away monologue. 2004 Kill Bill Volume 2. You Are a Renegade Killer Bee. Musings About Superheroes monologue. 2005 A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Sperm Whale and a Bowl of Petunias Ruminations. 2006, The Devil Wears Prada, about fashion stuff. 2007, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, a rallying cry to fight monologue. 2008, The Dark Knight. It's the You Want to Know How I Got Him, Now I'm Always Smiling, the Joker monologue. And 2009, The Hangover, it's the Wolfpack toast. Disconnected again, so I'm just going to end the show now. Good night, everybody. Don't stop.
Good night.